Sufferings, it's your boy Marty here to introduce this rip of TFTC. It was brought to you by our good friends at River, the best place to buy Bitcoin. River makes it very easy to buy Bitcoin, to sell Bitcoin. If you want to do that, you shouldn't sell it. They actually have a new thing at checkout if you're trying to sell Bitcoin. Michael Saylor comes out and says, are you sure you want to sell Bitcoin right now? Probably shouldn't. You should DCA into Bitcoin. River makes it very easy. You can set it and forget it by daily, weekly, monthly. If you DCA using River, you're not going to pay any fees on those buys. It's the easiest way to gift Bitcoin with River Link. You set an amount of Bitcoin you want to gift somebody. You create a link. You send that to somebody. You text it to them. You email it to them. You DM it to them. They click the link, and then they can sweep the Bitcoin to their River account or a wallet of their choice. It's a beautiful thing. River builds all their infrastructure in-house. They don't depend on third parties. It's the best place to buy Bitcoin. It's where we buy Bitcoin. Go to river.com/TFTC. Sign up today. You'll get $5 worth of Bitcoin. This rip was also brought to you by good friends down the hall, Unchained. Unchained is here to help you eliminate single points of failure in your custody model. Price of Bitcoin's going up. If you talked about owning Bitcoin publicly, you could be subjected to SIM swap attacks. Had a friend had this happen to him recently where he got SIM swapped attack. They went to go drain his exchanges, got past 2FA, all of that. Luckily, they didn't get his Bitcoin because he has his Bitcoin in an Unchained multisig vault, which keeps your keys offline, and they're always in cold storage. So you don't have to worry about somebody SIM swapping you and stealing your Bitcoin. Unchained also has an IRA product. If you have a retirement account and you want to get exposure to Bitcoin, get direct exposure. You don't have to buy the ETFs. You can actually hold the Bitcoin, take it in kind, as one should be able to do. Unchained makes that very easy. Go hit up Unchained's concierge team. Go to unchained.com/consultation. Learn about all their products, the vault, the IRA. They have a trading desk. They have a lending desk. They're doing it the right way. Unchained.com/consultation. Tell them that TFTC sent you. This rip was also brought to you by our good friends at Zaprite. If you're an individual out there who wants to accept Bitcoin as payment, Zaprite is the best way to do that. Go to zaprite.com/TFTC, set up an account, and Zaprite makes it very easy to connect your own wallets. They're wallet agnostic. You simply enter an XPub, connect your LND node, connect your Strike account, whatever it may be, and Zaprite handles the invoicing side of things. You can send invoices, payment links. They have a WooCommerce integration. So if you're a trucker, a rancher, a farmer, a doctor, a lawyer wants to accept Bitcoin as payment, go to Zaprite, connect your wallets, and start doing so today. The best part about Zaprite is they also accept fiat payments, so you don't have to have individual invoicing for people that pay in Bitcoin and people that pay in fiat. You do it all in one spot. You can connect Stripe, your ACH, and you send one invoice, and they can pay in fiat or Bitcoin. It's beautifully designed. They have they have dashboards, analytics, everything you need to hand over to your bookkeeper or your accountant. So again, go to zaprite.com/TFTC. Use the promo code TFTC at sign out, and you're going to get $40 off their annual subscription fee, which is typically $240. So with the code TFTC, you drop that down to $200. Zaprite.com/TFTC. Last but not least, this rip was brought to you by our good friends at Bitcoin Talent Co. Bull market's here. You may be looking to hire as your runway is extended because you have a bunch of Bitcoin on your corporate treasury. Go to Bitcoin Talent Co. It's a recruiting firm built by Bitcoiners for Bitcoiners. They understand Bitcoin multisig. They understand mining. They understand the Lightning Network, and they're highly competent recruiters. Andy, the co-founder, started Uber, grew their team from 100 to 10,000. He knows what he's doing. He knows how to go find the best talent in tech, design, banking, finance, whatever you need. They're going to understand your needs, and they're going to go get you the best talent to help us build out the Bitcoin standard. BitcoinTalent.co. Tell them the TFTC sent you and enjoy this rip.
Okay.
You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
Dr. Brooke Miller. Welcome back to the show.
Good to be here.
What's been going on? It's been a while.
A lot. It's been almost 2 years since we did this the first time in Austin. A lot's going on. I remember the last time we did it, it was right at the height of COVID, and we sort of self-censored. I don't think we're going to do that today.
I don't think we have to. Do you think the pendulum's switching back towards our direction?
Yeah, yeah, I do. Unfortunately, the government and the government agencies continue to claim some ridiculous claims that everybody knows is not true.
We heard this last night at the State of the Union.
You know, I didn't watch the State of the Union. My wife and I don't have TV anymore. We stream things, I didn't have any desire to watch that. I saw some clips of it, and it's pretty embarrassing.
Yeah. No, I didn't watch it either. I caught the clips, and one of the clips I caught was President Biden proclaiming that the mRNA technology that we pushed to market for the COVID vaccines is helping to cure cancer. Is this true?
I think it's causing it. I mean, how absurd can you be? It's like curing cancer. No, we've seen a definite uptick in cancer since the mandates came. And there are multiple mechanisms that have been proven scientifically how it can cause cancer.
And this was discussed on Capitol Hill a couple of weeks ago, correct? There was a coalition on Capitol Hill with Ron Johnson.
Yeah, Ron Johnson had a hearing, and he had a bunch of some of the world's greatest minds come in and talk about it. A bunch of different people from all over the world. There were some Europeans there, a woman from Israel, and a lot of, I think there were some Canadians and Americans. There may have been somebody there from Mexico too. And I've just gotten bits and pieces of that. But unfortunately, people in Congress don't seem to be paying a whole lot of attention to what really the problem is. I mean, COVID was bad enough, but the vaccine has been worse. The vaccine is going to continue to be worse. It's the gift that keeps on giving.
So now that we're almost more than 3 years out now since the beginning of the rollout of the vaccines and...
Yeah, 2020. January 2021.
What is the data showing?
Data shows a lot. They're hiding a lot of data too. But the data that from multiple sources shows that the vaccine, the more shots you get, the more negative the efficacy is. And that pretty much goes along with what I see in clinical practice. In around Christmas and early January, we saw many uptick in COVID cases. And without a doubt, everybody that was that I saw was vaccinated.
Yeah. And on the physiological side of things, on the what is actually happening, is it because I remember when we talked when you were in person in Austin, it was effective. This mRNA vaccine was really increasing the production of these spike proteins that were
it's really complicated, and I'll try to be as simplistic as possible, but just go through how the mRNA works. And initially they were told that you would get a shot and the shot would go in the arm and it wouldn't go anywhere else, be there for a couple of days, and your body would translate the mRNA to produce the spike protein, and the spike protein would induce an antibody response. And all that was true, but it wasn't true. What they didn't say is that the mRNA was placed in a vehicle called a lipid nanoparticle. And that lipid nanoparticle was able to carry that mRNA throughout the body to every organ in the body, crosses the blood-brain barrier. So it was distributed throughout the body. And that's very important. The lipid nanoparticle also has its downsides and, it's also harmful in ways too. What they didn't also say was that they changed the mRNA and put pseudouridine in it to make it resistant to the body's breakdown. And so we're finding that this mRNA, this modified messenger RNA, is resistant to the body's breakdown. It's throughout the body and it persists. And what it's doing is it's programming or telling your cells all over your body to produce a pathologic protein called the spike protein. The spike protein is the most serious pathologic portion of the COVID mRNA vaccine. So whereas if you get the infection, your body's going to build an immune response to the entire viral particle, including the spike protein, and it's going to clear the virus within 5 to 7 days, and then it's gone. But these vaccines are persisting for months. I mean, I think I've seen some studies where they've seen the mRNA and the spike protein lasting at least 6 months and possibly longer. So what they're doing is they are turning your cells into manufacturers of a protein that the body sees as foreign, and the body attacks it with inflammatory responses and autoimmune responses. The vaccine was also contaminated, highly contaminated with DNA fragments of simian virus 40, which is a known cancer-causing virus. And this goes along with the uptick in cancers that we're seeing since the mandates were rolled out. They're now talking about something called frame shifting. I don't know if you've heard about that, but frame shifting is when the ribosomes read the mRNA to produce the protein. Well, it slips and they read it in three base pairs at a time. And if it gets out of order, then it'll produce other proteins that you have no idea what they are. And so they're talking about this frame shifting phenomena as being very pathologic and very dangerous as well. In addition, the more shots you get, it's proving that your antibody profile or the type of antibody you're producing changes from IgG1, which is an antibody that will attach and kill the virus, to IgG4, and IgG4 attaches to the virus and makes it, acts as a Trojan horse and allows it to infect the cells more easily. There's also something called immune imprinting, where if we repeatedly see a vaccine, an antigen or a foreign protein, and we develop a memory to that foreign protein, and then we get hit with another virus that looks similar in some way, shape, or form, we will not develop a antibody response or an immune response to the attacking pathogen. We'll pump out antibodies and immunity to what we've been vaccinated for. And as you know, the virus is constantly mutating. And the vaccines that are currently being distributed are irrelevant because the virus is going to stay out in front of the vaccine technology. They can't produce the vaccine technology quick enough. The virus is already mutated to a different form. That's what coronaviruses do. That's one of the reasons why we've never been able to have a successful coronavirus vaccine, is because of the rapid mutation in the virus.
It's all pretty insane. It's especially insane considering the fact that they keep pushing it. What are we on, like, our ninth shot now? Their ninth run of these shots?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And you know, they initially said it was safe and effective, but they never had any data to show that. Actually, the Pfizer data showed that it probably was not safe and effective, either one. More people died in the Pfizer vaccine arm than died in the placebo arm in six months. And then, you know, they even played with what they call fully vaccinated. A lot of these vaccine reactions occur within the first several days of the first or second shot. And they didn't classify these vaccine subjects as fully vaccinated until 2 weeks after the second vaccination. So I think the actual data probably would have looked even worse than what it did. And they're masters at hiding it. And unfortunately, our agencies are captured and are helping them hide it.
Which is extremely nefarious. And so let's dive into that particular subject. Is it's become abundantly clear to me, and I think many others over the last couple of years, the fact that it wasn't safe or effective, I think effective, most importantly, for a lot of people who got the first two shots and then eventually wound up getting COVID. I know many people in my own personal circle who unfortunately did that and got COVID and were like, what the hell? I was lied to. I'm not getting any more of these. But for some reason or another, despite all this glaring evidence that it's not effective, they won't even broach the safe part of it, but can objectively say it's not effective, and yet they still push this on individuals and keep recommending that people get this. And what we had the CDC come out last week, the week before, and say that just treat this like the regular flu, and they're even still pushing the boosters on people. Like, why do you think?
Yeah, they just came out with a recommendation that people over 65 get an updated booster. And, you know, the data clearly shows in not just one or two studies, multiple studies, that the more vaccines you get, the more harmful it is and more negative the efficacy is. The most absurd was when they put it on the children's childhood vaccine schedule. I mean, children are, I mean, there may have been some kids, but usually no kids that I know of that were normal, healthy children that had a normal immune system ever had any problem with this virus. And initially they were saying, okay, let's do it so we don't spread it to grandma. But we know that doesn't occur. I mean, it's never been, they never had any data to show that it prevent infection, and it doesn't. So it's just, it's very disappointing, and it's maddening, to be quite honest. It's maddening to me, and it's maddening that my fellow physicians continue to push this false narrative that is actually harmful to their patients.
Yeah, it's particularly nefarious for pushing it on children too, because from what I understand, Robert F. Kennedy's talked about this a lot. They did that intentionally so that they could prevent themselves from being basically attacked legally. Like, if it's on the childhood schedule, you have protection
exactly.
From.
I'm not sure when that was, but I think in 1986, Congress passed a law, and Ronald Reagan, God bless his soul, the only thing that I know that he didn't do that I didn't disagree with, but he signed it into law that gave them indemnity for vaccines. Because they, at that point in time, the vaccine manufacturers were really not aggressively pursuing vaccinations. And unfortunately, it's turned out to be a disaster, because now we've got, I don't know, between 20 and 30 vaccines on the childhood vaccine schedule. And there's, to my knowledge, there's never been any safety studies with all of them together, and I don't think there are any safety studies where they use a true placebo, because a lot of times the safety studies that they use the adjuvant, which is very inflammatory and harmful in itself. So it's pretty sad. I mean, they talk about vaccine hesitancy. They've caused vaccine hesitancy by being completely opaque and not transparent and hiding things and continuing to say things that aren't true.
It seems like they're doubling down, because isn't there some proposal at the World Health Organization level where they want to pass this mandate where what the World Health Organization says everybody has to abide by, and if they don't, they're essentially going against, they're creating human rights violations.
Yeah, the Biden administration has been very proactive on that and wants our Senate to pass the World Health Organization pandemic treaty. And I think that's completely unconstitutional. Completely unconstitutional. And, you know, I said on the stage at CPAC, and we need to leave the World Health Organization, and we need to defund that World Health Organization. Basically, it's an organization that is run by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and the CCP.
Yeah, and what is this pandemic mandate? What if we were to sign the mandate and join it? What would it?
Well, I mean, it gives Director Tedros the right to say anything's a pandemic. Climate change is a health health is. I think more and more people are seeing that this is just a huge power grab to try to have one world government and centralized control. And you can see what they're doing it in as far as the food goes. Excuse me. As far as the food goes, they're running ranchers or farmers off the ground in the Netherlands. They exterminated 200,000 cows in Ireland to meet, climate change goals. They continuously say that beef cattle are destroying the environment, which is just, in my opinion, they're trying to make it so we as a nation can't feed our population, and I can't feed my family and my local community because they want to control the food to control the people.
Yeah, control the money, control the energy, control the food. Those three pillars of human society, and they're attacking all three right now.
Money, energy, food, and also that they control the. They have the mainstream media and control the media, and so they push their agendas through that. If they didn't have that, if they didn't own the mainstream media, it'd be even more of a. There'd be more people that would realize what's going on. But so many people rely on the mainstream media. Hopefully, they're wising up. I think a lot of people are.
When it comes to the subject of food security in the mainstream media. I mean, the mainstream media is completely ignoring what's going on in the Netherlands, what's going on in Germany, what's going on in Ireland. They're ignoring what's going on to Amos Miller up in Lancaster, PA. And yeah, they're ignoring.
That was the exact same thing. What happened to him? He's somebody that's, the Amish community is pretty independent, and they're a perfect example of what happens when you don't vaccinate for COVID or other things. They have a very healthy population, and they're trying to make them dependent on the outside world, and those people are very strong-willed, and they don't want to be dependent on the government or the outside world.
As a native Pennsylvanian, it's really been disheartening to see how they've attacked Amos Miller, particularly going after raw milk, and having lived in Texas for 2.5 years now and developed a good relationship with one of the ranchers here, provides raw milk. And it's nonsensical to me that they would attack this man for distributing raw milk, which shouldn't even be called raw milk. It's just milk.
It's all natural organic milk.
Yeah.
It tastes so much better. And obviously it's healthier, but it tastes so much better than the pasteurized milk you get in the grocery store. I used to not drink milk at all. And we started drinking raw milk within the past year or so. And I love it.
It's incredible. It's sweeter. Yeah. It tastes better. I broke a 5-day fast with some raw milk, raw honey, and raw eggs in a shake. It was the most delicious meal I've had in my life. It was satisfying because I didn't eat in 5 days, but it was a great way to break a fast.
Why'd you fast for 5 days? How in the world did you do that?
I got challenged. Somebody challenged me, said I couldn't do it, and I'm a meathead. I was like, I can do it, and I don't know if I'd do 5 days. Challenge.
Look at that arm, man. You've been pumping weights? Look at that.
I have been. I've been getting back in the weight room.
Good.
You're setting a good example. Getting back into...
Keep eating that raw milk, man.
Raw milk, eggs. That's the thing. Going back to food security and this attack on cattle ranchers specifically, I mean, it's completely nonsensical when you just go to a cattle ranch and you look at how green the land is and the fact that the cattle are essentially the stewards of this land with some direction from the ranchers. And then you taste the food.
It's absolutely absurd. And now there's a big push by the environmentalists to increase the buffalo population. It's like, they're pretty similar. You know, they're pretty similar. Cattle and buffalo, they can mate and cross species. I mean, if the buffalo aren't bad for the environment and they're completely unmanaged, why are cattle bad for the environment? And then the other thing, you know, what I've heard my entire life is, you know, animal fat and protein causes heart disease. And that's, you know, there's more and more data coming out and more real world common sense examples of how that is completely nonsensical. But, you know, people like Bill Gates, they want to create lab meat, and they're going to say it's better for the environment and better for the people, and it's better for their monopolistic ways.
Luckily, people are fading the lab meat too. Dogs won't even eat it, and I think humans. If you look at the Beyond Meat stock price, it's not doing too well these days. As there's been a complete rejection by the market.
Yeah, isn't that the plant-based meat?
Well, but they're attacking the cattle. And ranchers from multiple directions, whether it's pushing to just literally slaughter cattle because you think their farts and their burps are leaking too much methane into the atmosphere. But if they don't get that way, something you and Dr. Malone, you did a stream, had to be a couple months ago now at this point, talking about the push to mRNA vaccinate the cattle as well, and to get that technology into our food system.
Yeah. They've been completely opaque with that and haven't been transparent at all. So we don't know what's going on with that. They are doing it, but there's none that have been approved in cattle. There was one that was approved in swine, and I don't know if it's still being used. I was told it's not currently being used, but you know, from a legal standpoint, there's nobody that's using mRNA in cattle either legally that we know about. And I haven't heard of any illegal use of it. And thank goodness most cattle ranchers are against the mRNA vaccine anyway. And I don't know any of the personal ones that I know wouldn't voluntarily give their cattle mRNA vaccines. So that's why, you know, United States Cattlemen's Association, who I've been a part of ever since the inception, you know, 13, 14, 15 years ago, we approved a resolution coming out against mRNA use in livestock and food. And if the USDA and the FDA do ever approve it, we demand that all the data be an open book. So scientists that do not have any conflicts of interest can look at the raw data and see, one, is it safe, or were the appropriate safety studies done, and is it safe and is it effective? I really just don't see where it's needed, to be quite honest. I mean, we over vaccinate our cattle now anyway, as far as I'm concerned. So I don't see it needed. What my fear is they're working on this, and in order to get farmers or the public to accept it, we'll get some food or health crisis with cattle, like happened with COVID-19. You know, they were not supposed to be doing any gain of function research, and it's obvious that they were now. started in University of North Carolina, and Eco Health Alliance took it to Wuhan, China. The only question in my mind is, was it accidentally leaked or was it purposefully leaked? And I'm concerned that something like that could happen in the cattle industry, such as foot and mouth disease, where it's endemic in South and Central America, like in Brazil and Paraguay, where they're trying to import more and more beef. Why do we want to import beef from Brazil and Paraguay when the farmers and ranchers here in this country could make produce all the beef that we need in this country, and we could feed a large percentage of the world? But as you know, the monopolies have existed for some time, and they have gained control of about 85%. Four monopolies have gained control of about 85% of the protein market worldwide, and they don't give the rancher any profit because they don't have to compete. They have something called captive supply. And so consequently, the cattle numbers in the United States right now are lower than they've been at any time since 1951. And the 2024 calf crop is predicted to be lower than any time since 1948. So I think that's a national security crisis. If we're no longer able to produce food for this country, just like we're no longer able to do the manufacturing and no longer able to produce our energy because of all the things that our government has done to prevent it, then we're out of luck. We're shit out of luck.
Quick break here, freaks. This rip is brought to you by Gradually Then Suddenly, a framework for understanding Bitcoin as money by Parker Lewis. I wrote the foreword to the book. I'm honored to have done so because it's the best 0-to-1 primer if you're looking for a logical explanation of why Bitcoin obsoletes all other money. Buy one for yourself and maybe a few for your friends. Go to thesafehouse.com/gradually. That's thesafehouse.com, safe spelled S-A-I-F, thesafehouse.com/gradually. Use the promo code TFTC for $5 off at checkout. Buy it now, freaks. The price of Bitcoin is going up. You need to understand it. This is the best 0-to-1 primer. Back to the show. How do we change the tide here? And many different, whether it's the mRNA vaccines, the corruption between the CDC, the WHO, and the FDA in the context of food security, USDA. Like, it seems glaringly obvious to me, to you, that there's systemic issues that are really becoming national security issues. And it seems like we're at this very important inflection point, like mentioning the supply of cattle in the country, like reaching lows that haven't been seen in 70 years when the country was probably half the size. I don't know the exact population numbers, but that does not sound good at all from a directional perspective. Like, what do you think needs to happen? Because I know at CPAC you were pushing to withdraw from the World Health Organization. Obviously, this hearing with Senator Johnson on Capitol Hill was like a good step forward in putting the case forward that, hey, these vaccines, this mRNA technology has not worked. It's had the opposite effect of what Fauci and Biden and others have been pushing onto the market. Like, they're like, what is, in your mind, the effective counter attack to what I deem, I'll just speak for myself, to be a full on frontal attack on individual health, national security, and the future of not only this country, but the world?
Well, I think we just need to continue to educate people and let people, you know, through your, you know, your reach on your podcast, Rogan. I know, you know, Robert Kennedy has a large reach. Robert Malone, just continue to speak the truth. So enough people get pissed off that they vote the people out of office that are causing this problem. And it's people in both parties. But, I believe in President Trump is the man to do it, to sort of root out the swamp. But I really like Vivek Ramaswamy, and he says he's going to abolish this agency and that agency. I think it's long overdue. I mean, we waste too much money. What do these agencies do other than waste money? They certainly don't seem to be needed. In my mind, a lot of them don't seem to be needed, or at least restructure them and shrink them in size. Because, you know, I don't think it's going to be too long before our single highest line item expenditure on our national budget is going to be serving the debt.
Oh, it's already there.
Is it?
I think so. It's at like $1.2 trillion a year. Just in interest, not even the principal.
Yes. Yeah, that's just an interest. We can't even pay the interest.
No. And it's very, very frustrating. I mean, because we see this a lot in Bitcoin, most specifically in the Bitcoin mining industry, where we're intersecting with the energy sector and just having been in the industry for 6 years and gotten caught up to speed with the different parts of the energy sector, how our grids work, how we extract oil and gas and get it to market. It's abundantly clear to me that we have the intellectual capital and the entrepreneurial spirit to fix these problems as Americans, as
absolutely.
Individuals.
I mean, we've got to cut down on the bureaucracy and let the American ingenuity loose and release American ingenuity and not tax the crap out of us. And, some regulation is obviously needed. We need to prevent monopolies. I mean, the farming and ranching part of our economy is completely monopolized, and we need to break up those monopolies. That's the only way that we're going to be able to do it, because they have so much money and power, and Congress doesn't have a backbone. They basically succumb to high-paid lobbyists and who has the money. I mean, and they're promoting more and more. Those lobbyists are promoting these large corporations that have monopolies.
Yeah. Which is why we do this podcast. We think fix the money, fix the world. And that's another good question, because it's one thing we've been talking about here at the Commons in Austin, is recognizing particularly within the conservative movement that people have really honed in on these attacks on liberty, whether it be from a health perspective, a food perspective, a monetary perspective, literal border security perspective. Like, it seems like the conservative movement has honed in on these systemic issues that are only growing and could create a cataclysmic event at some point within the next decade if they're not dealt with appropriately. But again, it all goes back to the money at the core. And I truly believe that if we fix the money via Bitcoin, we will be able to fix a lot of these problems, because they won't be able to fund them. What are you seeing in terms of people on the conservative side of the country beginning to recognize or not recognize Bitcoin? Because I think that is an unlock once people on who are more conservative in nature and really want to fix these problems, once they understand Bitcoin and the potential it has to really give individuals some power against these centralized forces, I think that's going to be a massive inflection point of, we can actually begin to get a lot of stuff done if we just opt out of this debt system, this fiat system, and into this hard digital currency that they cannot control.
Yeah, you just described everything why I was attracted to Bitcoin. I'm just pissed at you and Matt, my son-in-law Matt, for not getting me into it. It's beating me over the head and saying, you got to have this a lot sooner. I'm of an older generation. I'm of the generation that really doesn't completely understand it. I understand the concepts. I mean, when you guys get to talk and the terminology, sometimes I get lost. But I have a lot of very good conservative friends. They're, a little older than you, and they don't understand it. And I think if education would go a long way. A lot of people are scared because they don't understand it. But if you and as little as I know about it, they seem to be listening more and more. But, we got to have Bitcoin seminars for for dummies, you know, because everything you say is completely true. I mean, the Fed can continue to devalue your dollar by just printing more and more and more and more. They're going to push to a, you know, they're trying to wreck the economy and push to a central digital bank currency, and they could turn off your money at a moment's notice, like they did the Canadian truckers. So we don't want that. So this is really a freedom movement, and I think more and more conservative people are getting into it. But I got a little bit of a funny story to tell you. I have a patient who's actually older than I am. He's 80, and he comes into my office, and he's fading a little bit, but he's still pretty sharp. And he talks about Bitcoin and mining Bitcoin with his kids and his grandkids every time he comes in there. So more and more mainstream America is paying attention, and hopefully we just got to keep pounding the drum and keep talking about it. You know, 2 years ago when or a year and a half ago when you guys were in Nashville and gave that Bitcoin presentation at the United States Cattlemen's Association annual meeting, a lot of people didn't have a clue what you were talking about, but more and more, some of those people are starting to think about it and think, hey, you know, this is a pretty good concept. So I think it's happening. It's just not happening as fast as we would like, but it's probably happening as fast as humanly possible.
Yeah. That's one thing on the messaging side we really need to hone in on, making it as simple as possible. I think just Bitcoin as freedom money is a good
I think first of it line. As I think it represents freedom, and it's a natural fit for conservatives, because the conservative movement that I'm a part of is about the Constitution, small government, freedom. Let me live my life and you not tell me what I can do, what I can't do, what I can eat, raw milk or you know, if I want to eat bugs, let me eat bugs. I don't really want to eat bugs, but, you know, the government shouldn't be telling us what we can and cannot eat and what we can and cannot consume. And that's just all about freedom and the Constitution. And it seems like the political left now is they know best, and they want to control what everybody does. And it's all a power thing. They just want to control that. They want to continue to remain in power.
Yeah. And that's, I think, once, particularly middle America, and we see this in the mining industry too, because mining is a huge electricity price arbitrage game. And what we're finding is that a lot of the cheapest electricity that is available, particularly on grid, is in the Rust Belt, where you had massive factories that were consuming a lot of electricity move out of the country due to globalization. And we see it up close and personal. Like going in, you have a substation that used to serve this large steel smelting factory or whatever it may have been, that is just sitting there with a bunch of excess capacity. And it's in a rural town, which has had a falling population over the last couple decades because that large factory moved out of town, took the jobs with it. And we've seen the revitalization in the rural areas in which Bitcoin mining enters. You basically give the utility company more revenue. They're able to buy power in bulk, so they get it cheaper. They're able to charge less to residential consumers for that electricity. And so there's really not only like a freedom aspect to it, but there's a revitalization aspect to it too, particularly for the middle of the country that's just been completely neglected, the flyover states, if you will, that people, the elites on the coast, like to rub their noses at. And that's what I think can be most effective, is that when it comes to Bitcoin, there's a large part of the population that is completely convinced that they're not going to be able to vote their way out of these problems. There needs to be an external factor or mechanism that allows them to take power back and not have to ask permission. Your freedoms aren't given to you. They're taken and defended. And when it comes to taking and defending freedoms, Bitcoin is one of the most powerful tools. You take the freedom over your money, over your wealth, over the value of your work, and you defend it via cryptography. And I think I'm rambling here, but from a revitalization standpoint and a potent counterpunch to the encroaching centralizing forces of the federal government. It's like, just take the power, protect it, and say, hey, you can do whatever you want, but my money is safe in Bitcoin. There's nothing you can do to take it from me.
Yeah, that's true. And that's really good. Just sitting here talking to you, I'm thinking about, you know, everything seems to be, as far as our society and economies seems to be against rural America. And is that by design? I mean, do they want to destroy rural America and everybody move to the cities where people are usually more compliant and want services and are more dependent on the government? Because, you know, rural America is so dependent upon agriculture and farming and ranching. And we've seen agriculture become, you know, not very economically viable. And people thus are moving off the farms and ranches. They're moving to higher population centers. And the economy, basically these monopolies have been stealing wealth out of rural America. And we've seen, you know, drug abuse rise in rural America exponentially with the economy falling. And what you just described in Bitcoin, how it could revitalize rural America, I'd never really thought of that. And that's awesome. That's absolutely awesome. And I think farming and ranching, rather than getting our government to enact laws that are actually fair for farming and ranching and do away with the monopolies, we just have to bypass the monopolies and create ways that you can buy food locally or semi-locally and just bypass all the monopolies. It'll be healthier and safer. And you got to think that that's why they went after Amos Miller, because they don't want that to happen.
No. Now you got me running here. Because like when you think of Bitcoin, Bitcoin's this distributed system. And I truly believe, like, understand information theory and how complex systems should be organized from a grassroots perspective. Like, distributed systems create the most robust outcomes at the end of the day. And so Bitcoin, via the distributed monetary network that it provides the world, should be mirrored in other industries. So like what you're describing with farming and agriculture, like fighting against the monopolies, how do you create that more robust system? You make it more distributed. You distribute the concentration away from the monopolies. And that's, I don't know where I'm getting at here, but there's like a mirroring aspect to what you're doing.
Just like you bypass the fiat currency, you got to bypass the monopolies. Yeah. You got to go directly to, and more people are being worried about their food. I mean, that's one of the positive things on the mRNA scare for livestock. People worried about farmers injecting their cattle with mRNA. Well, I'll tell you, it's not going to be the farmers and ranchers. It might be the corporate feeders. The ones that already have contracts with the big monopolies, but it's not going to be your small farmers and ranchers that do that. And we just need to bypass that system and figure out how to do it. There, you know, the Beef Initiative has been a movement to do that. There are all kinds of other movements that help distribute food directly from ranchers and farmers to people. And then, you know, we got to restore manufacturing in small town USA. We got to, it's going to be good for us in the long run. Will it be as cheap as China? No, but China is actually, you know, the individual items may be cheaper coming out of China, but the long-term destruction for our economy are going to be devastating. So we got to wean ourselves off of China as far as manufacturing goes too.
Yeah. The trade-offs for cheap goods in the short term for a worse off economy in the long term is not a good trade off. And then that too, like the quality of the goods is not going to be as good as American made.
You're exactly right. I remember it's been about, I don't know, how long has it been since Bill Clinton was president? You were probably a little boy then.
24 years. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember when he signed the North American Free Trade Agreement. And Wrangler Jeans was a thriving business in the little town, Luray, Virginia. They had a Wrangler plant. And shortly after signing the North American Free Trade free trade agreement, Wrangler basically moved their jeans plants to Mexico, and it just destroyed the economy of that small town for several years. It was devastating, people losing their jobs.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a way to fix it. Like going back to like getting food directly, we have a model of this here in Austin, Local Pastures, which is spearheaded by Shirttail Farms, which is about an hour and a half outside of Austin. But they have this, it's essentially just like a food truck structure where it's right next to Austin Beer Garden, not too far from my house. And you go in and you can, there's a bunch of ranchers that it's essentially a co-op where they give their beef, their duck, their raw milk, and you can go in, buy their products directly, grown less than 100 miles away. And they've had so much success that they're going to open up a bigger brick and mortar shop. So I think what I'm getting at
here
is like,
what's the name of it?
It's called Local Pastures.
Local Pastures. Because people, you know, believe it or not, I guess since I've been, have a little bit of a national visibility, I get contacted by people about where they can find good, healthy beef, you know, and, you know, a long ways away. So that's good to know. That's good to know. Where do they get processed, you know?
I'm not exactly sure. I think locally here in Texas. I think it's similar to what Cole's doing at K&C Cattle.
Cole, I referred quite a few people to Cole. He was the only one that I knew of down there. And then Jason Rich is in Colorado.
Yeah. I'm telling you, the Shirttail eggs are, they have the deepest orange hue I've ever seen in any egg. They're creamy. They're delicious. They're nutritious. And
what's this? What do you say?
The eggs that they produce.
Oh, really? Speaking of eggs, I had somebody, I don't know, I have to test it out. As you know, I've got arthritis in my shoulder. But a patient came in and said, you know, a buddy of his told him that you eat one or two duck eggs a day and it pretty much takes your arthritis, osteoarthritis symptoms away. And so he'd been eating a duck egg for about a week. He goes, you know, I think my arthritis is better. So anybody out there, I'm not saying it's going to be a definite cure, but it's something that I heard. It's basically low. I mean, there's no downside to eating duck eggs for a while to see if your arthritis gets better.
You're going to start testing that out?
Yeah, I am. Our neighbor, we get chicken eggs and duck eggs. We don't get a lot of duck eggs, but we're going to start asking for them. Get some eggs from our neighbor, and we supply them with beef, and you know, we get the raw milk from another neighbor. We don't eat much produce, as you know. I try to be, although I'm not always really good. I try to be a carnivore, and so we don't eat a lot of produce, but try to source as much as we can from people that we know that know how they raise it. It doesn't have any chemicals and pesticides on it.
But Dr. Miller, I've heard this is not scalable. Like, we need the monopolies to feed everybody. Is this distributed direct-to-consumer model even scalable? Is it possible? Is it just a pipe dream? Is it something that is destined to be specific to people who are well off and can afford to pay higher prices for ground beef and other cuts of meat?
Oh, it's definitely scalable. I mean, you know, we do custom select in our beef, but there are a lot of people out there that do custom select in their beef, and it's no more expensive than what you get in the grocery store, and it's 10 times better, and you know what it is. But, you know, all we need to do is get the transportation of it down, because some people are shipping beef all the way across the country by UPS, and it is going to be scalable. We just got to keep working at it. The problem is we've got to demand that the United States Department of Agriculture stops making it so unaffordable for small packing plants to exist. I mean, it's there again. We've got to have our agencies working for agriculture, small family farmers and ranchers, not working against them by putting these onerous rules and regulations on them. The amount of money that it takes to start a packing plant today is just ginormous. But there are some, you know, some local movements where the communities are coming together and going to try to build some packing plants. And I think that's great. And I mean, and, you know, we have large countries. I mean, we have large cities, but there are a lot of cattle in California, you know. There are a lot of cattle in the Midwest for Chicago. There are a lot of cattle in the Atlantic region for New York, Washington, D.C., Atlanta. A hell of a lot of cattle in Florida. So it should be certainly be doable. It's not going to be something that's going to be done overnight. But I don't think we need these big mega packing companies. I think we need a bunch of more regional ones.
Yeah, more distributed packing. It's funny because we've become so disconnected as a broader society. I think you and I have honed in on this, but it's very simple. Again, these complex systems where it's a monetary system, a food system, a health system, they work much more efficiently when they're more distributed because you're physically closer to the source of information that is telling the market where the demand and supply of each good is. And all this hyper-centralization becomes physically disconnected from the sources of information, which are small local towns that have different wants and needs at any given point in time.
No, you're exactly right. The centralized control, they look at completely different numbers. They're looking at what they deem as, they're looking at what can make them the most profit, not what's the best product and what's the best for, and not that farmers and ranchers don't want profit, but they do it for a reason. I mean, they love living where they live. They love the land. They love the cattle. And they're part of the communities. And if you're part of a community, it's like when COVID hit and I was employed and the healthcare corporation had their guidelines, their goals, their recommendations. And I disagreed with them. And I was connected to that community, though, and I'm connected to my community, and I'm not going to do something in my community that I think is going to be harmful for my community. And that's going to be the same thing with food. I'm not going to say there would never be bad actors, but I think the bigger the corporation and the bigger the centralized control, the more likelihood that you'll have problems.
Yeah, because they divorce themselves from like direct kinetic confrontation in the form of like, hey, you gave me this advice medically, you gave me this food that I ate, and it did not work out in my favor. Like, since they're so centralized and so, again, far removed from the source of the information and the people that are subjected to the effects of these centralizing factors, like they don't physically have to get feedback from the people that they're affecting in many ways.
Yeah, the people that they're affecting are statistics, they're numbers, they're not human beings, they don't see the face of them, they don't talk to them, they don't have to see them on the street. And, they're so far detached from the people that they're making decisions for that it's affecting their everyday lives. You know, just like in centralized closed control of medicine, they look at populations, what's going to be best for the population. Whereas as a physician, I'm morally obligated, and the Hippocratic Oath, I'm morally obligated to my patient, what is best for my patient, not what is, I think, necessarily best for society. But usually what's best for the individual patient is best for society. And I don't know how the centralized planners get it wrong so often.
Well, I think it's because what's best for each individual in their own specific needs collectively is best for society. You can't just have a broad brush of this is what's best for the population, go out with a mandate and say, no, this is good for the population, and just thrust a broad brush mandate on a bunch of people or medical advice on a bunch of people. That's not going to work because, again, there's differences between each of us individual humans. It's if you're a physician like yourself focused on the individual patient with their individual needs at any given point in time, like it's going to be very specific to what they need at that point in time. And that's what the centralizing forces try to do is say, hey, this broad toothbrush fix is what everybody needs at this point in time, which is not the case. But if you approach each individual as an individual.
Two individuals come in and see me, and I don't always treat them the same. I mean, we tailor it to the individual patient. Everybody's different. Whereas centralized control says, you know, treat this one with this, 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 and this. And a lot of times it's under false pretenses. And unfortunately, so many people in medicine now, so many physicians and nurse practitioners in medicine now follow protocols. Is it part of the protocol? Is it part of the protocol? And what they fail to, they fail to figure out that they got to think about each individual patient and treat them each as an individual as opposed to a protocol, because quite often the protocols are wrong. You can't, I mean, you just can't practice medicine that way. And, you know, the protocol for the pandemic was vaccinate everybody to protect grandma. Well, that was a, you know, that turned out to be completely false. We weren't protecting grandma by vaccinating the little grandchildren. But that's what centralized control told us to do.
Yeah. I think that's the message that the country needs to hear. From the Bitcoin perspective, from my individual perspective, and why I focus on Bitcoin is because I think the country has gotten to this point where it's extremely polarized from a political perspective. It's red team versus blue team. And a lot of people in the government, regardless if they're on the red team or blue team, are really pushing the same agenda at the end of the day and have convinced the populace to fight red team versus blue team, where it's like, no, we should all look at the structure that houses the red team and the blue team and say this centralized entity is really the cause of the problem. It really comes down to centralization. Like last night, that was all the State of the Union. It's not only last night, it's every year. It's this massive spectacle where everybody's applauding, they're standing up, they're booing, they're doing whatever. It's just a spectacle of these people who are extremely far removed from most of the country in their little corner in DC, making broad brush decisions for 350 million people, whatever the population of the country is now. And it's just, to me, it's like repulsive watching these theatrical, what's the word I'm looking for? These theatrical, spectacles.
Lies.
Spectacles. Lies. Yeah, lies that are just like, hey, we're in control. And
the economy's great.
Yeah. Inflation's the lowest it's ever been.
Yeah, the jobs markets is all of the border.
Yeah. It's insane. But for some reason or another, most people have been funneled into that frame of this is where the battle is. And it's like, all right, let's get out of that frame. And when you fight within that frame, you're not going to get anywhere. Like, reframe things. Like, it should really be centralization versus distributed systems that cater to individual needs at any given point in time in any particular location.
Yeah.
I think we're going to win, though. I think we're starting to win hearts and minds.
Oh, I definitely think we're going to win. We have too much going for us not to win.
Yeah. And how do we increase this momentum, in your opinion, outside of education and all this?
Oh, man. I don't know. I just think keep hammering at it. Keep educating people. Eventually everybody's going to wake up and realize that most of what they hear coming out of the central planners and central controllers it's done for the benefit of the central planners and the central controllers, not the people. Like the climate change thing is just a complete hoax. Complete hoax. Just look at the history of the world. I mean, we had an ice age. Well, the world's been warming up ever since. Was that man-made? I just read some scientific data the other day where, parts of the world are warming, but it's regional. I think we're doing pretty good. I'm a little bit older than you, obviously, but I remember being in high school. We were going to have an ice age. They said the world was cooling. We're going to have an ice age, the climate crazies. And then the next thing was, it was global warming. And Los Angeles was going to be underwater in 10, 20 years. Well, that didn't happen. And the world hasn't really warmed that much. I think it's part of, basically Mother Nature. I don't think man is causing that much of a change in the whole environment. But now they got to call it climate change. And every time a hurricane hits or a drought hits or a blizzard hits or a monsoon or a terrible rainstorm hits, they blame it on climate change. Well, that's been happening. Study your history. That's been happening since the beginning of time.
Brooke, you're going to get me in trouble. I don't know if you saw it this week, but the Center for Countering Digital Hate put the TFTC YouTube channel on a list of 96 YouTube channels that are spreading new denial in the context of climate change. We've said too many things like this on this channel before, and now we're on an official list presented by this NGO, the Center for Countering Digital Hate, as new deniers. We're new deniers saying things like, we don't believe that cataclysmic climate change is a existential crisis to humanity, has gotten us on the list.
I guess they don't believe in the First Amendment, huh? They don't believe in the Constitution of the United States.
And it seems like they're veering off their mandate. Is this hateful to say this? They're the Center for Counteracting Digital Hate, and they've put us on this list. Is this hateful?
No, not at all. It's optimistic. It's optimistic because so many people are so fearful. It's hateful what they're doing. Is they're creating fear and anxiety in people for no reason. Just like they did when they overblew the statistics with COVID-19, when someone died from other causes and they might have had COVID in their body, that tested positive for COVID. Well, they went down as a COVID-19 death. That's hateful. That's instilling fear in people in order to control them. So that's the hateful part, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and then you're not even allowed to have open discussions just to explore the realm of possibilities in all these different contexts. It's like, hey, I'm just talking here. I'm just saying, hey, I've heard these stories before too. I was told that the Statue of Liberty would be underwater. I was told that damage from hurricanes would ruin the south of Florida, and it just hasn't materialized. You know what? I like the warm weather. Yeah, I think a little bit more.
Yeah, greenery. More people die from cold than die from heat. That's for sure. A lot more. But you know, you're not an old guy, but you've got a little bit of experience. I've got more experience than you do on some things. Obviously, some things like Bitcoin, I'm pale in comparison, but. The problem is they've convinced a lot of younger people who do not have a lot of experience, and hopefully as they get older, they'll figure it out. But they continue to push these same fear porn narratives to try to control people's behavior. And that's what they're doing. They try to push these fear laden narratives to control people's behavior and climate change. That's what climate change and COVID were all about.
Yeah. And that's, we need to harken back to JFK. The only thing to fear is fear itself. And you can't, you have to give props for props or due. It's an effective form of gaining control is fear, tapping into people's brains to really trigger those fear reactions that we get as humans to force a certain action on the rest of on the whole of society. And that's another message I try to get out to people, is like, don't let them scare you. They're intentionally trying to scare you and induce fear so that you react a certain way.
Yeah, I mean, they try to scare people with their diet. I mean, telling them unhealthy things are unhealthy. Like, I have to educate my patients all the time. What's my cholesterol? People are so fearful that cholesterol is a driver of heart disease, and it really isn't. It's just there. It's part of our ecosystem in our body. And got to re-educate them to, because it's just a, it's a big game, because big food has figured out, hey, you know, we can produce all these low fat items that are really bad for people's bodies, but we can sell the hell out of them and make big profit. And then big pharma's there to give you your cholesterol medicine. Heart disease is probably the number one killer in the United States, and the number one prescribed medications are statins. Well, why do we have so much heart disease if statins work? Why do we have so much heart disease if our consumption of animal fat and protein is going down?
Yeah, why is everybody so fat if the food pyramid's correct
and they're people? Exactly. It's crazy. Well, absolutely crazy.
I want to officially welcome you to Team New Denial. There's not many of us. There's 96 of us, according to the Center for Counteracting or Countering Digital Hate.
Oh, am I on the list now? I'm a digital hate guy.
Oh, you should. I'll have to send you the report. They're using AI to scour transcriptions of YouTube videos, and now that we're on the list, they'll scour every episode that we put out for talk about new denial in the context of climate change. So since your name is in the title, will be in the title of this episode, yes, you are officially on the list as well.
Well, I'm glad I'm known for something.
It isn't. I woke up Monday, somebody sent it to me. He's like, hey, did you know you're on this list? I was like, no, just found out. But it's hilarious how pathetic it is. If you actually, I'll send you the report if you read how they're constructing these AI tools, or just embedding a bunch of bias in it and then presenting it as truth to YouTube and Google. They're trying to go to Google and YouTube, say, take these channels down, because our AI has detected that they're telling lies. And if you look at how they're building their AI models, they're just injecting bias that has no anchor to the truth or evidence that
monopoly on the truth. Only they only know what the truth is.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, it's pretty disgusting. Very hubristic.
Yeah. Yeah. We just got to keep going though. Absolutely. Keep going.
Yeah. We need to get more people at CPAC interested in Bitcoin. I think when they,
you know, I'm doing my doggone hardest. I really am. And I've been talking to Matt and Mercy a lot about it. I'll continue to talk to them a lot about it, and maybe one day we'll get you on the stage there.
I'd be happy to come orange pill the people of CPAC, because I think it's really important.
I think you'd have a lot of people that would love to hear what you have to say. I mean, it's right down their alley. They're freedom loving people.
Yeah,
they love freedom, and that's what Bitcoin represents, is freedom.
Yeah, I would argue it's the most free market in the world right now, because there's no way the central authorities can control it. It's completely bereft of influence from the central authorities, which is a beautiful thing.
Yeah. We just got to get some of the national leaders on board. Which national leaders in Congress or whatever are favorable to Bitcoin, do you know?
We've got Senator Lummis, Thomas Massey. We've got Warren Davidson.
Awesome. Thomas Massey's awesome.
I think Byron Davis in Florida.
Okay.
Is a fan of it as
he's
well.
He's a big name now. He was a huge draw at CPAC.
Yeah. Senator Hagerty in Tennessee, very supportive. Senator Blackburn as well.
Marsha Blackburn.
Yeah, yeah. We're getting our allies.
Okay. How about Harriet Hageman?
I'm not sure. Not sure. And even on the left, we have Ron Wyden out in Oregon. He's a fan. Uh-huh. Slowly but surely. The incentives are such that everybody will bend the knee to Bitcoin, because it just, the world of free markets for money really anchors to or coalesces around the best money, and Bitcoin is the best money. And it works for, again, not to make this like hyper political, I'm not saying like if the red team
gets it, they'll win. I think it's beneficial for everybody at the end of the day, red team, blue team, whatever. But I do think the movement that cares about freedom should get it more intuitively and support it earlier than the blue team would, I would think.
Yep, I agree. If we want a free society and Western civilization to exist, then we don't need centralized control. We need freedom. That's what this country was built on. That's what made it the greatest country in the world, in the world history, is our freedom and free enterprise.
Yeah. And it may not seem like it, but I think because of Bitcoin, it is still mourning in America. May not seem like it.
I think so. Mid-morning nap, maybe. wake up from the mid-morning nap.
I think it's going to surprise people to the upside.
I hope so. I truly do. Because, you know, I was born in 1960, and I experienced freedoms that your generation never experienced. And now your children's generation is going to not experience the freedoms that you experienced. So we got to somehow figure out how to get that all back.
Yeah. I'm going to fight hand, tooth, and nail to make sure my boys and any future children that my wife and I have better freedoms than I had in the 90s.
Well, I am going to do the same thing for your children and my children and my grandchildren. That's why I'm doing what I'm doing.
Well, thank you for doing it. It's always a pleasure catching up. We need to do it more often.
Yes, absolutely. I agree. You just let me know when you're getting short on people to interview.
We got to do it in person next, whether I'm up north or you're down here.
Okay. All right. I would like that.
Yeah.
I can come to Philadelphia or the beach this summer.
Yeah, let's do the beach. Just do a beach run. Make sure we're getting a...
I agree. I that'd be a good reason to come up and see Matt, Amanda, and their children and hang out at the beach and be carefree for a long weekend.
Yeah. I'm going to text Matt right after this and tell him to make it happen as quickly as possible.
Okay. All right. Well, Matt's awesome. Matt's absolutely awesome. You know, when, not to get too personal, but when he and Amanda first got married and they were up there and we were down here, it was a little bit of a standoffish type deal. But then COVID happened, and with all the lockdown policies in Philadelphia and Pennsylvania, they moved down here for I don't know how many months it was, but we just basically had our Miller commune down here. And we all got to understand one another, and it's been a great relationship ever since. Yeah. Love Matt.
The whole Miller clan is a very strong clan. I'm happy.
We are. I mean, I don't know. I think my wife did a great job raising him, is all I have to say, because I don't know what I did to end up with so many great kids and great moral values, and every one of them. Very proud of all four of them and their children. I have seven grandchildren now. So very, very proud of them and the company that they keep, such as you, and the people in the Bitcoin community that I have met mainly through Matt and Amanda, but you know, Joe's teammates, in Arizona, the ones that he hangs out with and most of the team, they're all, you know, just great people. They're really down to earth, great people with good moral values. And so my kids are good judges of character.
Well, I'm happy to know them. And I'm happy to know you personally for setting the standard, something to strive for as a younger father looking to build a legacy like you have. So thank you for putting that standard out there. And
thank you for the comment.
Something I'm striving for.
How many children do you have now? Two?
Two.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah.
Hopefully not the end of the,
keep pumping them out. We need good kids from good families in this country. We really do. Too many young people are not having enough children. And, that's gonna be bad for this country.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to go do my best
Okay. You'd be part of the productive class, not the useless. I love that term you coined.
Yes, the productive class, the unproductive parasitic class. I think they're on their way out. They're gonna struggle. They're gonna fight hard, but I think inevitably, ultimately, they will not succeed in their goals to control us.
Yep. You're exactly right. All right.
Well,
great.
Well, you enjoy your weekend, and hopefully we see each other soon.
Huh?
Hopefully we see each other in person soon.
Absolutely. I get to go do 24.2 this evening. Have to go see a couple of people at the office, but I'm going to go do 24.2. But I'm not in as great a shape as I used to be. I haven't been real super motivated lately, but I'll get there.
Yeah, you look fine. I wouldn't be too hard on yourself.
Okay. All right.
All right. Peace and love, freaks.
Take care, Marty. See you later. Okay.